We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello guys, and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Now, just quickly before we get into anything else, I will let you know, 2024 is going to be a big year for touring, for Wage Against the Machine, my storytelling and stand-up show all about the old dodgy jobs that I used to work, my $20,000 robo-debt, and the time that I broke a 100-year-old roller coaster. So if you think that those are stories that you'd like to hear anything about, come and check it out. I have shows coming up this very week, next week actually, at the Wynnum Fringe Festival up in Queensland, and next year I'll be starting off in Rockingham, then going to Perth, onto Adelaide, and I'll be doing the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, a full run there, and I will also be trying to squeeze in a couple other little festivals where I can, just trying to hammer out some details of dates and locations and all that sort of stuff. But keep your ears open, I will hopefully be coming to somewhere near you. It's a quick episode this week, and by that I mean I forgot to get some sponsors. We have no sponsors. We're not brought to you by anything this week. We're brought to you, I guess, by you, the Patreon listener. Thanks for supporting us. If you want to join our Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff and put a little amount in the subscription there. You get bonus stories. We really appreciate your time if you enjoy the podcast, which if you are returning, I assume you do, and you want to hear more of it, you can get all our bonus stories on my Patreon, and I'll also occasionally throw up a piece or two there, a little something or other, but at the moment it's just the bonus stories. Until then though, guys, I will be, as always, the bearer of weird news. Let's get into the headlines. Indigenous children's activists and medical bodies have rejected Peter Dutton's call for a royal commission into child sexual abuse in Indigenous communities, saying, "We already know who's trying to hurt our children." They ran the No campaign. After the ban on Nazi salutes in Victoria, police held an emergency briefing to remind officers the salute is now illegal and no longer just the easiest way to identify their friends within a protest crowd, allowing them to know who best to protect when things turn wrong. UNESCO has teamed up with Interpol to build a virtual museum of stolen artifacts. It will contribute to raising awareness among the general public to the consequences of illicit trafficking of cultural property and contribute to the recovery of stolen objects. To date, it's actually just a link to the British Museum and a bunch of Swiss banks, but they assure us that more will definitely be added as time goes on. The agency is collaborating with Interpol and other partners for the $2.5 million online museum. Funding for the project's first phase is actually coming from Saudi Arabia, of all places. The Saudis are just going hard on straight up shaming white history, saying that if you'd bothered to build something interesting yourselves, we'd be stealing stuff from you. Now, despite the US labelling the issue a national security threat, Australian defence personnel have ignored a US Five Eyes unidentified aerial phenomenon briefing and refused to attend the meeting. On the plus side, it's the first time an Australian military hasn't blindly followed the US since about the 1970s, and maybe it's a good thing. On the downside though, the military said they didn't have time to mindlessly pursue boogeymen from the sky that didn't exist. After all, they had to focus on terrorists that were definitely sneaking into the country disguised as refugees rising from the water like mermaids taking to land. Senior Australian Defence personnel have been caught mocking the subject while preparing briefing notes according to Freedom of Information documents. They were supposed to have said, if we had to pursue every questionable object in the sky acting erratically, they'd effectively need to ground the entire Qantas fleet. Washington State Senator Jeff Wilson was arrested at Hong Kong International Airport and charged with possession of a firearm without a license in what he called an honest mistake, explaining that after a lifetime of being a rich white guy with a gun in America, he actually didn't think that he could get in trouble. The charge could see him receive up to 14 years in prison and a fine of more than $12,000. Well now, seems maybe we need to put the Chinese government in charge of America's gun control. They seem to be the only ones willing to hold anyone accountable for reckless gun-related actions. FIFA has banned Spanish football president Luis Rubiales from all football-related activities for 3 years following the allegedly non-consensual kiss he gave to Spain player Jenny Hermoso after Spain beat England in the Women's World Cup final. They said they spent a long time looking over the incident and decided that they would take action after they figured out there was no way, just absolutely no way, that they could make money from the incident. FIFA fans were shocked after the announcement that the disciplinary committee had voted this way, but mostly it was because they had just learned that FIFA has a functioning disciplinary committee. Where have they been all these years? Is this a new initiative? What is this? All of Australia's living prime ministers, except for Paul Keating, have joined to express their support for Israel, call for solidarity with Jewish Australians in a rare bipartisan statement. The statement also emphasised, as a country who continues to lock up refugees, fails to provide for Indigenous communities, and allows job seeker to remain below poverty levels, we could never condone harming civilians. Not while the war is on, at least. You gotta wait until the war is over, and then people stop paying attention, and you can basically do whatever you want at that point. So less of a condemnation and more sage advice from a seasoned veteran on the matter. Bud Light has inked a sponsorship deal with Dana White's UFC after their previous trans ad caused a severe case of bazookalalas to break out all across America in what's been classified as a severe overcorrection caused by panic by the culture wars. They also announced that they'd be keen to sponsor the 2024 Thunderdome, the Death Race, and fund another Fast and Furious film just for good measure, whatever it takes to stop the furthering outbreak of the Sukilalas. Victoria started a cash container scheme, giving recyclers 10 cents per bottle and finally eliminating the last excuse that anybody had to visit South Australia outside of Fringe Festival time. Do come see me in the Fringe Festival in Adelaide. Thanks, guys. The British chief executive of Google's AI unit has warned the world to treat the risks from artificial intelligence as seriously as the climate crisis, saying that we cannot afford to delay our response. Governments quickly walked into inaction, promptly getting lunch, waiting for an AI activist to start showing up so that they could promptly arrest them for actually disturbing the traffic. Has this guy not been paying attention to climate change? We've known about it for 127 years. The human-android war from Terminator happens in 2029. In 127 years, we'll just be living in a goo tube powering robots in the Matrix. At least we wouldn't have to worry about climate changing, as our goo tubes will be perfectly climate controlled. It'd be a great day for everybody. Instagram has apologised for adding the word terrorist into profile bios for some Palestinian users. Parent company Meta says a bug caused inappropriate auto-translations. Really, what they meant to write was the word insurgent or dissident, so that we'd be comfortable with the slaughter of said innocents. They are, after all, true, focus-tested words that don't cause people to examine their moral compass. So much better for a business, really. Well, that's it for the headlines today. We're going to move on to some bigger news now. It is church expense account news. The Catholic Church. What have you done this time? Let's take a little look-see, shall we? So, seems the Catholic Church has won the right to challenge in the High Court a landmark Victorian ruling forcing the Church to take greater liability for the actions of pedophile priests within its ranks, stating, "Come on now, I know that we're the Catholic Church, but even we don't have enough money to cover all of these expenses. We have to avoid that many taxes, come now." Maybe if they spent a lot less money shipping them to new churches across the country, then they would have some money to cover some of these expenses. But still, it's a very large bill to cover. So over the past 2 years, the Victorian courts have delivered and upheld an unprecedented ruling that the Ballarat Diocese was vicariously liable for the abuse of a 5-year-old child at the hands of assistant priest Father Brian Coffey. Vicarious liability is typically used to hold employers responsible for the wrongful or negligent actions of their employees during the course of their employment, even where there is no fault on the part of the employer. Leading to the ultimate question, are they liable for the actions of their priests? Well, does a bear shit in the woods? And is the Pope covering up priests following children? The Church, however, certainly doesn't seem to think so. The Church is arguing that it's not responsible because the abuse took place during after-hours social visits. So, let me get this straight. The Church is genuinely arguing that they have no jurisdiction over things that happen outside of their walls and outside of their hours. Because I seem to remember a church that had very different opinions of things happening outside of their walls. They really seem to think it's their business when someone wants, I don't know, an abortion outside of their church, or when LGBTQIA+ community members wanted the right to get married, or when participating in the Stolen Generation. Yes, we haven't forgotten. Seemed pretty nosy then, didn't you, church? Besides, isn't God everywhere? And with that, God's judgment and his responsibility, although don't forget, God does act in mysterious ways, which gets him out of a lot of trouble. It's a very good built-in fail-safe. Why suddenly do they think they are exempt? What is their reasoning? Let's have a little look here. Oh, I see. Seems that they are learning from this new age of workplace disruption and disassociation and are currently arguing that priests, much like Coffey, are not formal employees, and thus they claim that they are allowed to dodge claims of vicarious liability. Oh, so the church thinks it is a responsibility avoiding apps such as Uber Eats or Menulog. That's interesting. The only thing that Silicon Valley companies are disrupting are basic workers' rights and human decency. And when they make so much money doing it, everyone's got it in their head that this is an acceptable way to behave now, right? They look towards the person who's made the most money and thought, well, they made the most money doing that. Obviously, that's an okay way to behave. And I understand the church taking on this mentality. They were the original disruptors. They went and made up an infallible, intangible moral yardstick to whack everyone with and figured out how to get paid doing it. It's a good racket while it lasted. But times have changed, guys. My phone is my new god. And in response, the church has enlisted Silicon Valley to help create their own new app for priests looking for work, for guidance, or simply to be relocated after doing something unspeakable in a local town. For all sorts of legal workarounds, sign up your staff to LawDash. Yes, LawDash. Do you need staff members but don't want all the hassle that comes with being accountable for their actions? Do you want all the benefits of hiring a person but none of the pesky fallout when they make a questionable choice? Why not sign up your business to LawDash? LawDash's convoluted employee contract allows you to evade being financially liable for even the most heinous of responsibility violations. LawDash, because not even God knows what they're up to. speaking of intangible concepts, we're moving on now to theoretical plane news. Airlines. Forget airline food. These days, what's the deal with airlines? 90s comics used to decry the quality of airline food. These days, it's the best part of the experience. After ticket fees, baggage fees, meal fees, seat selection fees, an hour and a half in a security queue, only to be felt up by an aging security guard with a raging power boner, but I'm going to pay over $2,000 to be felt up. I wanted to be someone better looking than Trevor at the security desk. Maybe someone with softer hands. I appreciate a digit in the anus from time to time, but at least lube it up first. Before we know it, they'll be charging a fee to ensure that the seat exists, excess fees for the toilet, and a little extra for the privilege of breathing oxygen. We no longer need to worry about hijackers holding us hostage on the plane. The airlines are doing it well before they even get a chance. And the terrible qualities of modern air travel continue, as Qantas has told the ACCC when it filed its legal defense, responding to the ACCC's legal action, alleging that it had advertised and sold more than 8,000 tickets for flights on its website for an average of 2 weeks, and in some cases up to 47 days after cancelling the flights. Its defense? They claim they don't sell customers tickets to any particular flight, but rather a bundle of rights that includes alternative options in the event of cancellations. Wow. I thought we were the merchants of bullshit at this podcast. When I sell a ticket to a comedy show, I thought, you know, I was selling a pretty loose concept. Comedy, that being, you know, subjective and all. At least with comedy, you know that it's subjective. But planes, they do still objectively exist, don't they? We haven't slipped into, like, the Matrix, where everything is simply a simulation of a thing that once existed. Qantas' slogan is Spirit of Australians, but I guess they're really leaning into the intangible quality of the spirit in that slogan, enough so that you can't even prove that they even exist. Qantas has changed its name to Schrodinger Air, because at this point we are just trapping people in a box and hoping nobody will check to see if their spirit is still alive or dead. When Qantas said, "I still call Australia home," I didn't think that they meant that they never move out of it. Qantas, you're 102 years old now. Don't you think it's time that you left home and went and saw the world like you were selling tickets to do? Qantas claimed that informing customers that it had already cancelled flights they were booked on would have created uncertainty and frustration. You're damn right it would have. Hey Qantas, quick question. If I told you that I was booking one of your theoretical flights and offered to pay you with a bundle of rights to some theoretical money, or better yet, offered you the dumpster fire of money that is crypto, you'd be pretty uncertain and frustrated, wouldn't you? You'd be wondering, am I ever going to actually see that money? Is this thing that I've agreed to even existent? David accused the competition watchdog of ignoring the realities of the aviation industry, those being extracting maximum profit through minimum expenditure times by just really wringing out the customers for any dollar that you can squeeze out of them, and having sufficient staff numbers to handle the complaints from shortcuts that you implemented. Well, that's just bad business, isn't it? Qantas said, in its defense, as you've said from the start in this case, we fully acknowledge that the period examined by the ACCC was extremely difficult for our customers. Going on to say, let's be honest, a business acknowledging things weren't great is the best you're going to get these days. Harvey Norman still hasn't paid back the money it took from claiming JobKeeper, and he didn't even apologise. So they are actually setting a new standard of behaviour for iconic Australian brands fucking up publicly. Now, out of habit, they did reschedule the apology multiple times before actually delivering on it, but some things are hard to break. Taking precaution, Qantas went on the defensive, claiming no airline can guarantee flights. Oh, sorry, no. What else are you selling then? I was under the impression that those big metal things were planes, or are they just terribly inconvenient buses? Qantas has employed long-dead Belgian surrealist painter René Magritte to create their new plane tickets. Tickets do not actually have a time or a gate printed on them, as this is apparently irrelevant. You just show up to the airport at any time that suits you, and you'll be promptly told to wait between 12 hours and 30 days to return and take a flight, because you, as a consumer, don't have specific timetables to keep as long as you get to fly. Because that's all you care about, isn't it? It's not the destination, it's the journey. We've been telling them that for years, and they have really taken that on board. The tickets will, however, have one thing written on them. Ceci n'est pas un ticket. Or, this is not a ticket. Moving on to sports news now. Sports! That's really all I know about it. Sports! But our next big sporting opportunity to make people love us again in the sun is coming up, and it's the Summer Olympics. That's right, the Summer Olympics. So with that in mind, the Australian government has done the only thing that it can to ensure we look good come summer. They fast-tracked the citizenships of three athletes, one from South Africa, one from Russia, and one from the US. Yep, we're bringing in ringers. We're gone full Mr. Burns playing the softball team for the 2024 Paris Olympics. Now, this might seem like petty favouritism geared towards making us look better in the public eye by winning trophies. Man, humans do love shiny, shiny metal. But guys, you are wrong. You're so wrong. This is embracing the very nature of the World Games. We are bringing the world together to show who is best. We just happen to be bringing them all together onto a single team to smash everybody else and rub their stupid faces in our victory. So, who's joining the Team Australia? Well, with the support of the Australian Olympic Committee, we will be welcoming South African canoeist Pierre van der Westhuizen, Russian wrestler Grigory Orokov, and US water polo player Sam Slobodine. We will be shipping them their customary cork hat, a kubra, and a copy of Paul Kelly's Greatest Hits, along with a jar of Vegemite that they'll be expected to eat spoonfuls of in interviews, despite nobody actually having ever eaten Vegemite like that, you know, by the spoonful ever in the history of Vegemite, and a pamphlet delicately explaining how to hold the ambivalence that comes with publicly supporting the Indigenous cause and being a country that overwhelmingly votes no to give them the support systems that they need to better themselves. It's a rich and complicated culture that we've got here. Some listeners may think that I'm exaggerating the sports washing element of this story, and it's simply just a matter of me not liking sports. And you're only half right there. Here is Immigration Minister Andrew Gimes, who used ministerial discretion to intervene and grant citizenship to van der Westhuizen. He said, "The applicant's contribution to the sport may enhance Australia's international reputation and provide inspiration and motivation to other athletes. I have decided it would be of benefit to Australia for this applicant to be an Australian citizen." There it is. There it is in black and white. No need to try and build up our international reputation by doing something positive for the downtrodden, like treating our refugees well, or minimizing the damage to the earth by not mining more coal, or not selling enough coal to ensure that we drown the Pacific region within 20 years. That'd be hard work. Like becoming a high-level athlete. No, 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 no. Much easier to just import some pre-existing goodwill. Somebody who's already done the hard work, so we can just plug them into our society. This is classic Australia. Instead of doing the work to build up our national reputation, we fast-track some goodwill via a sports program. That's not goodwill. This is goodwill. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Good, goodwill. Could we not find a new Hemsworth to bandy about on the international stage to make us look better? No? No? Because we don't support our arts program. Yep, that's what it is. We don't support the arts program, so we don't actually have any more Hemsworths to give out because we have underfunded all of the arts. Yep, no, that makes sense. Oh, that's why we keep importing New Zealand citizens, especially New Zealand actors, just taking them in and hoping that they will do the goodwill and good work for us rather than having to teach our own. Yeah, I get it. Ah, that's why we go multicultural. Yeah, no, I'm there with you. Van der Westhuizen was not otherwise eligible to apply for citizenship, as he had not been living in Australia for more than 4 years, as required by law. Giles said he was of good character and had already passed a citizenship test. And our investment has paid off, with Westhuizen having already started winning medals for Australia. So Australia has preemptively given all athletes in the world Australian citizenship in an attempt to win the Paris 2024 Games by default. If they're all Australian, then we can just claim all of the medals. Welcome to Australia, the world's athletes. You'll fit right in. Generally, the processing time for citizenship applications can vary, with about 90% processed within 10 months, though some people, we will call them refugees, have been waiting a little bit longer than that. And as such, after hearing about these athletes, refugees that have been detained for roughly 10 years say that they'd be willing to join any sporting team, any of them, even curling if it helped. Going on to say that they've seen the quality of some of the Winter Olympians and feel that they could do at least as well as that Hungarian skier, you know, Elizabeth Swanee, who did an amazing skiing halfpipe run that was described as a perfectly mediocre run without falling and barely attempting a trick in either of her two runs. It is beautiful footage. Do we have a clip? That and Stephen Bradbury are the quintessential aspirational runs of sporting prowess that we have come to expect from our global athletes. Moving on now, we've got appropriate response news. Just a quick check-in with the war in the Middle East this week. I'm aware just how much we dedicated to the war last episode, and while we won't be applying that level of forensic bullshittery to this episode, I can give a quick update on the situation on the ground. It is still very much fucked, but this week we will focus more on responses from other governments to the war. This is a real who's who of navigating international clusterfuckery. Starting with local villains and guys who are still hoping that you'll support their villain arc, Israel. Israel has done a bit of an odd thing by coming out and claiming there is evidence Hamas used North Korean weapons when it launched its surprise assault. A claim backed by experts, but expectedly rejected by the Hermit Kingdom. But what is the point of this? Are we supposed to feel worse about a force fighting to remove occupiers from their land because of who they need to buy their weapons from? Would it be better if the weapons used to hurt civilians to blow up children came from America, like yours do? Is that the Halliburton guarantee? If you want to blow up children with impunity, you need to buy American. Weapons which will assure that you can mess with any country that you like. Buy American. An American gun is your passport to building a base in somebody else's territory, or to overturn their government, be it democratically elected or not. Be sure to buy American. If you want to mess, be sure you only mess with the best. Buy American. Message brought to you by Halliburton and other gunfuckers. How has the Australian government responded to the whole war situation, given that we will likely be dragged over to interfere on one side or another at some point? Surely peace is high on our agenda, given that this is almost an inevitability. Maybe a ceasefire would go down well right about now, right? Right, Australia? Oh, Australia. You do disappoint me, increasingly so. Yes. Australia has abstained from casting a vote in a UN resolution calling for an immediate humanitarian truce in Gaza. I mean, I shouldn't be surprised. We are going to need so many gold medals to be able to paper over this. No wonder they're going hard on bringing in new athletes. Like everything the UN does, the motion drafted by Jordan, the country, not a person, is not binding, but is more of a litmus test, really, a political character alignment chart, with 120 good aligned nations voting in favour, 14 evil aligned countries, including the US and Israel, by voting no. Meanwhile, there's 45 chaotic neutral countries, including Australia, the UK, Germany, India, and Canada, who abstained from voting at all. Just straight up refusing to get involved, with even pretending to look like we care about helping the Palestinian people. It's a non-binding motion. You may as well have signed up to a motion that said that you condemn them for not allowing Bigfoot to take residence in Israel to seek refuge from Bigfoot hunters. It's symbolic. What justification did these coward countries give? These centrists dressed as progressive countries, also the UK. I don't know about some of them, but Australia argued that it was incomplete because it did not mention Hamas as the perpetrator of the October 7 attack. Fuck. What a ridiculous hill to die on. Who else is in this cluster bundle of carelessness, callously cowering on the edges of the right side of history? Hang on. Haiti. What are you doing in there? Haiti. You fought a bloody revolution for your freedom and to get your land back. This feels like something that you should be passionate about. Who else is in there? Tuvalu? Oh, I'm particularly disappointed in you. You spend all of your time, very rightly, shaming Australia for behaving poorly and taking away your autonomy with an influx of seawater, and you don't want to get involved when it comes to someone else's time to call for help? Fucking shame. Shame! Who do you think you are? Australia? Ooh, you live long enough and you see yourself become the villain, don't you? And Ukraine? Come on, Ukraine, sure. You guys are busy fighting a war against aggressors, but Zelensky doesn't need to be there himself. Send a delegate! These other countries might disappoint me, but you, Ukraine, after this whole messy business with Russia, you can't even muster up the time to vote? I'd send you to your room without dinner for the rest of the war, but with this whole messy thing with Russia, it's best that you're able to stay mobile just in case they drop a bomb on it and make an excuse like, oh, there were Nazis hiding in the bedroom. See, that's how you show solidarity. Although Penny Wong has acknowledged the widespread suffering, which is great, I guess. She did stop short of describing Israel's Gaza siege as collective punishment, which it is, otherwise known as acknowledging the truth of the situation, which we don't like to do. But you gotta walk that line, right? What if Israel succeeds? We still need to trade with them. We aren't anti-Semites, after all. So, as a majority white country, I imagine we'd be responding much the same as the other whiteys. We're all colonized by the same group, so groupthink must be kicking in right about now, right? Well, take a looky here. Seems the Scottish government has pledged £500,000 of humanitarian funding to the relief effort in Gaza. The cash is going to be given to the UN's Relief and Works Advocacy Flash Appeal, which is working to support those being displaced by escalating violence in Gaza. International Development Minister Christine McKelvey also reiterated the Scottish Government's call for a humanitarian corridor to allow aid to be delivered to civilians, a call that has thankfully been listened to, and the aid has actually started now after much delay. The moving of displaced civilians has begun into Egypt. But they aren't the only white people. So what's happening over in Ireland? Something good, I assume. Seems Ireland has announced €13 million in additional funding for the humanitarian assistance for Palestinians and the country's leaders, called for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict. They are not fucking around in Ireland. No, they never really have they? All that hard-lined Catholic guilt must be good for something, I suppose. Both of these countries know what it is like to be trodden underfoot at the hands of an oppressor, and that cultural trauma is manifesting in different ways. Here in the global south, seems the distance from our former oppressors has left our brains sort of soft and squishy, or maybe it's simply that we took over the role of oppressor, so now we see ourselves as a cooler kind of England, one that people kind of like England Plus or England 2.0. But living directly next door to those who stole your land and culture has kept the compassionate fires burning. Turns out, of all the white people, the Irish and the Scottish are the best white people. No wonder that we tried to keep them out of the greater fold of white. We can't have this kind of compassion running rampant amongst the whiteies. That's risking erasing the culture that we worked so very hard to build. Moving on now, it is art news. Art, that fleeting expression of delicate humanity that allows us a reflection of our hidden and sometimes previously unknown selves through a mix of mediums. When a pile of discarded junk can say more about us than a 10,000-page treatise on the bleakness of humanity by simply being bananas taped to a wall that some idiot paid $120,000 for. Really makes you think. And that might be the most significant reflection of them all. Says, I never learned the value of a dollar. Or alternatively, it's one banana, Michael. What could it cost? $120,000? Long-time listeners will know that I love covering art on this podcast because it has the ability to really lift the tone when weeks are hard, but also because it's not just politicians who do stupid things. We artists do them as well, all the time. And here to show the truth of this is visual artist David Shergley, who created this fun lost sign asking about the most generic pigeon. And this image, which I think makes the most appropriate card for announcing that you have a UTI. Well, he has created a new work by pulping 6,000 donated copies of The Da Vinci Code to create new editions of 1984. This all started 6 years ago when the Oxfam charity shop in Swansea in the UK pleaded that customers stop giving them old copies of Dan Brown's retirement fund made into book form, The Da Vinci Code. Shergley saw it and decided that he was going to interject a form of social commentary / highbrow interfering snobbery that, frankly, is a large part of the reason that people struggle to connect with books and readers and art in general. Upcycling the one-hit wonder fun for a summer's Let's Never Admit That We Took Part in This Craze book into new editions of George Orwell's dystopian classic 1984. In parts of the world, parts not run by Disney, 1984 has entered the public domain. So Shergley has decided it is time to cash in, claiming that he is doing this because more people need to read 1984. And what better way to ensure as many people as possible get to read a text that they probably faked their way through reading in high school by selling your own copies of it for a mere, 941 Australian dollars. Jesus, dude. I could pick up a brand new copy for $20 at a reputable bookstore and $5 at a secondhand bookstore. You think someone spending over $900 on a book is then going to open it up and read it? All you've done is create an expensive paperweight. Shergley said, George Orwell, I think, always intended it to be a warning. It wasn't necessarily a parable of an existing state, but it was kind of a warning of what could happen when we don't devalue our democracy. I mean, yes, but also, no, it was both, guy. It was both. Did you not read this in high school? Or maybe you should read it again. I hear someone's got a few copies of it lying around. It was absolutely both. A warning against the totalitarian states that existed at the time and how we didn't want that to happen in other places. Both, guys, both. Just makes me think that even if you read it, you didn't understand it. I mean, there are some choice quotes from the book that show what you are doing is counter to the warnings of the book. Here we go, ready? Simon, a minor character from the Ministry of Truth, where he works on an updated edition of the Newspeak Dictionary, says, "It's a beautiful thing, the destruction of words." See, Simi enjoys destroying words less for the glory of Big Brother and more for his own intellectual satisfaction. Does that sound a little familiar to you, David? Does it? Then there's O'Brien, a Ministry of Love employee and the main antagonist of the book, who says, "We do not merely destroy our enemies, we change them." A party man through and through, O'Brien is Big Brother's willing servant, who delights in torturing Winston to the point of breaking him, saying, "Power is in tearing human minds to pieces and putting them together again in new shapes of your own choosing." Does that sound a little familiar to you, David? You are now literally taking this horrific ideology and applying it to second-hand books, but somehow making it worse because you're doing it for exorbitant profits. It's weird to say that at least O'Brien was a principled villain. He knew that he enjoyed breaking people and did it for the love of the game. You are just here for money grubbing. Shame. Besides, you're missing the point. We need mountains of copies of Dan Brown, or whatever current pop fiction was hot that one year and this future coming summer, sitting around the same way that we need piles of fast fashion and piles of excess food. It's the only way that we know how to learn any kind of lesson is with piles. Have you watched a documentary, David? Did it leave an impression on you, David? Is it because they had a big pile of something to show you how horrible a person you are, David? How will we learn new life-changing behaviors and lessons if we aren't shown piles of excess just sitting around for us to point at and shake our heads and cluck our tongues? Onto a more modern form of art now, if you are so bold as to call it that. Bored apes. Yeah, they're back in the news. And they definitely still exist. I guess the owners haven't found enough suckers to pawn their questionable NFT purchases onto, and so the trend must continue. Pyramid schemes are only fun when you're at the top of the pyramid, guys. You've got to get in early. Over in Hong Kong, there was a gathering. Bored ape collectors. Is that a zoologist? A gathering of zoologists? Primatologists. What's the collective noun for a group of bored ape collectors? Suckers. That's it. Suckers. Suckers who attended a little thing called Ape Fest. See, Ape Fest is the only festival with more open scams than Fire Fest, which was a literal scam. Ape Fest is definitely the kind of festival that would hire Jake Paul doing a double act with Mark Zuckerberg's sister Randy Zuckerberg singing her song about crypto. And for good measure, they'll get crypto scammer and rapper Razzle Khan as their headliners because they clearly have no real taste for art. Next time you see a student handing you a flyer at a fringe festival in a way that can be best described as art student realizing the limits of their potential in a public place, remember, you could be at Ape Fest and appreciate where you are and take the flyer. Well, surely, just the existence of an NFT festival in the post-NFT world of 2023 is not enough to warrant it a spot in this show. And no, you are right, it's not. There's more. See, as visitors to ApeFest in Hong Kong found themselves complaining about eye problems after the festival. Odd. No not a great outcome for a festival, even if you were seen attending the Pink Eye tent at Burning Man, or more commonly known as Sunburnt Cockfest. A number of people said on X, formerly Twitter, the home of the NFT, that they experienced eye burn. Now, this isn't a crowd known for trusting pre-established systems or traditional means of losing money, like wasting it on gambling, lighting it on fire, or spending it on random tangible collectibles that are definitely going to be worth something one day. If I have to hold on to them long enough, I can just do it. If I can just hold on to it longer, don't listen to them, Luau the pig, you adorable Beanie Baby King, you'll have your day in the sun, and then they'll all see. They prefer more modern forms of losing money, like random intangible collectibles and digital MLM scams. And look, each to their own, but at least with a digital MLM, you don't fill your house with containers of bottles of milk or turning you into an episode of Hoarders waiting to happen. So it has its positive qualities, I suppose. So when one Adrian Zdunkic, who is apparently known in the crypto community for providing chart-based technical analysis of digital assets, said he visited the hospital after attending ApeFest and was diagnosed with photokeratitis, which is known as welder's eye. Does welder's eye impact your brain? That might explain what happened to Scott Morrison. Have another look at that video, it's just the best.
The PM was at a ceremony to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Darwin, and this appears to be an open and shut case, so to speak, of how not to weld. With the PM lifting his mask, mid-welding.
Photokeratitis occurs after unprotected exposure to ultraviolet light. And guys, I've seen the video at the festival. It was happening at night. There was no sun around to burn them. So how did this happen? So according to doctors, it was likely due to UV from the stage lights. I mean, we shouldn't be too surprised. This is all just in keeping with the tradition of NFT investors getting burnt by the shysters who make them. The incident is reminiscent of one that happened in 2017, where attendees of a hype beast party reported eye damage after the lighting contractor used Philips bulbs that emit UVC, a light so powerful it's used as a disinfectant. But you know these hypebeast party motto, future's so bright I'm gonna need retinal surgery. Okay guys, moving on now to animal news. Researchers have found that in order to avoid unwanted male attention, some frogs appear to fake their own death. The research was released in Ugh, No, Not Tonight magazine. I hear it's a real page turner. Now, I've heard of starfishing, but playing dead? Not a good look when the women in your life would rather pretend to be dead than put up with your behavior. Researchers say this is a response, often from smaller females, who are responding to the overtly aggressive male scramble for mates, where male frogs often try to leapfrog over each other to have sex, what we are colloquially calling going off like a frog with a cock. In these situations, several males can end up clinging to a female, what we in the human world would call the last people to leave the club syndrome. Too many males will try to mate with the same female at the same time, causing the female to take a more drastic response. She would have spoken up sooner, but through the scramble, she ended up with a bit of a frog in her throat. And I totally get it. We've all had a partner who wasn't very good in bed. Enthusiastic, sure, but doing anything that was good for anyone involved? Certainly not. This is often the young male who feels needless pressure to be instantly good at sex despite either having never done it before or only done it poorly and had nobody speak up to help them. They assume because they've been wanking for so long that they have a mastery of this very similar skill. But the truth is this. Have you ever told somebody that they have something in their teeth It's a whole thing, right? It derails entire conversations. The other person can focus on nothing else but this new piece of information. It's potentially socially devastating if not handled with just the right amount of social grace and poise. Hot tip for trying to get out of a conversation that you aren't enjoying. You tell the other person that they have something in their teeth. The longer that you've been talking, the more devastating it will be to their social standing. They will panic, and if you are lucky, they will run to a bathroom and fix the situation by giving you ample time to find a new conversation to join or just find a window to leap out of. And this is just a conversation. Imagine needing to gather the courage mid-coitus to tell the other person that they're doing a really poor job. For both of you are great, but that is a proper coitus interruptus. It's a total surprise. There's almost no coming back from it unless it is handled with extreme care, much like a penis. And that is why this story is riveting. It boils down to the basis of survival instincts. As a woman, the odds of a person you are fucking being the one who will eventually kill you are staggeringly and depressingly high. Apparently even higher for frogs. The scientists say that these male frogs are displaying needlessly aggressive behavior, which they are. They also assume that the wriggles and vocalizations of the females are going unheard. However, I propose a darker solution. The fragile males heard that they were doing a bad job, and they got angry, taking the situation into their own webbed hands. So of course it's just easier for a woman to pretend that she croaked. That kind of male will suppress the trauma and walk off thinking that he is such a stud that he once fucked a girl so good she literally died. He's going to be devastated if he ever realizes that she was faking it all along. Fortunately, they don't actually pay enough attention to the women to realize that they're the same frog. So it's win-win for everybody. In other animal news, birds in North America will be renamed to avoid any harmful historical associations with people. The American Ornithological Society announced North American birds will no longer be named after people, any people, looking to rename around 80 species found in the US and Canada next year. KFC immediately panicked after remembering that they whitewashed the fact that they got their recipe from a black woman and gave her no credit, but pumped the brakes after realizing it was only living birds that people cared about. Once they were cooked up, nobody cared what old racists they were named after. Phew! Some of the birds will be renamed, including those currently called Wilson's Warbler and Wilson's Snipe, both named after 19th century naturalist Alexander Wilson. There's Albon's Shearwater, a seabird named for John James Albon, whose family owned slaves. Ah, that old story again. Boy meets bird, boy names bird, boy goes on to have deeply problematic life involving the owning of slaves, or maybe some racist ideas that were at the time normal, but have far from aged well, and people are rightly feeling icky about you getting to have a nice little legacy that isn't about your deep-seated issues. Boy dies, society changes bird's name, bird has no say in the matter at all whatsoever. A classic tale as old as time. Human history is so replete with this kind of milkshake duckery that we have to stop naming things after ourselves. Anythings. Ever, because we have proven time and again that we shouldn't be allowed to have nice things. We initially named planets after gods, but that has proven to be a problem. Early contender Uranus, the god of the heavens and sky, and giggling at double entendres, leading the pack. But all of the planets have their problems. Neptune, the god of the sea, and terrible father who tried to lock up his daughter so that she'd never fall in love with Prince Eric, and of course, the worst of them all, Jupiter, who is just celebrity god and serial sex pest Zeus in a classic disguise. Be it a swan, golden rain so that he can sneak into a princess's bedroom, doing straight up identity theft by transforming into the goddess Artemis to have sex with one of her followers, or as a gas giant, we really messed up by naming the mightiest of the planets after him. After that, frankly, we've lost the galactic naming rights to anything new. Modern astronomers have really nailed it by naming planets a series of unrememberable letters and numbers that more resemble a secure password on a computer than a planet. Than any planet that I'd want to live on. So maybe we just need to start over, renaming all of the animals with a series of letters and numbers. The number one has never proven to be a sex pest or a racist. No. He more just keeps to himself. After the announcement, however, Milkshake Duck himself, yes, the Milkshake Duck, held a press conference saying that he was sick of being a yardstick for these problematic figures and wanted to be renamed. Because you don't understand the nuances of duck society, and that those ducks with green heads deserve to be ostracized for the way that they look. And maybe you'd understand if you frantically kicked under the water while appearing calm on the surface for a mile in my flippers. That'd be a nautical mile, I assume. No, I don't know the difference, and I won't look it up. You do some research for once, eh? Emily Williams, an ornithological and Georgetown University, said heated discussions over bird names have been happening within birdwatching communities for the past several years. Upon hearing that there was even the mildest of chances of controversy, which could be then dragged out for an entire miniseries, Netflix put an immediate bid in to turn this whole thing into a documentary, with the rights to highlight a single character in a miniseries that will be popular for a summer and then spawn a cacophony of unnecessary spin-offs that nobody will watch. This started in 2020 after the infamous incident where a black bird watcher had the police called on him for simply asking a white woman to follow the law by putting her dog on a leash. The Ornithological Society started renaming birds when a group called Bird Names for Birds sent a petition to the society urging it to outline a plan to change harmful common names of birds, suggesting birds be named for their characteristics, resulting in a bird named for the Confederate Army General John P. McCowan being given the comically phallic name the Thick-Billed Longspur. Ooh, yeah! A different kind of problem, to be sure, one that is easier to explain to future generations. As long as we avoid the nearly inevitable Birdie McBird face references, then I think that we can handle this transitional period with a little bit of grace. There is, however, one voice that has yet to be consulted on the matter. Birds. So we here at the Bearer of Weird News rounded up some local birds with an impromptu town hall to get their two chirps on the matter. When asked on the matter, birds were heard to say, "The move doesn't go far enough. The problematic association isn't with the racists, it's with the human race." And then there is just the collection of silly names that they've had to endure, and I promise you I am not making any of these up. So we've got the Dick Sissel, the Fluffy-Backed Tit Babbler, the Monotonous Lark, the Perplexing Scrub Wren, Spangled Drongo, the Sad Flycatcher, and of course, the Grey Go-Away Bird. All ridiculous names. How does one gather respect with names like those? If those are the names that are going to be given by humans, then frankly, they want to distance themselves from humans altogether. And birds are thrilled to no longer be connected to this celebrity species and destroyer of their natural habitats, humanity. They don't even want the species names that we've been giving them and would rather be referred to by their own chosen names. So here is a small sampling of names that the birds would rather be known by in future. Now, these were all translated from chirps, so bear in mind, they do sound better in their native chirp. So cassowaries, who are named from two Papuan words, cassu meaning horned and wari meaning head, so horned head, a rather rude and some would say body-shaming name, would actually rather be named Thunder the Wise and Gentle. Hummingbirds wish to be known as the Nimble Pixie. The peacock doesn't want much of a change, actually. Its life is pretty easy. It just wants to be known as Monstrocock. Because in Monstrocock society, size really does matter. Rainbow lorikeets are furious. They don't even have all of the colours of a rainbow on them. No, no, no. They wish to be referred to as Zargut, the Destroyer of Worlds. Strong choice. Penguins want to be known as Fish Lords, as they have mastered the seas. And boobies, who have been saddled with the quite childish name, want to be taken seriously and refuse to be called anything but the more scientific Big Beautiful Mammaries. Galahs have had enough of being used as an example of foolishness in Australian culture, are demanding to be taken seriously. Now they'll be known as Warlord Steve. Magpies love the local colloquial name that they've been given, but wish for it to be taken on a bit more wide-ranging. For those who aren't sure, the local colloquial name is the Swooping Cunt of Death. So no change needed, but a bit more of a worldwide adoption of the colloquialism, as I said. And finally, just a quick update on our ongoing stories. Colombia is going to war with Pablo Escobar's hippos. Long-term listeners would remember the now 160-strong population of hippos who bred from the hippos imported by Pablo Escobar and have found Colombia a delightful place to live. And what's not to like? No natural predators, a bite that can break a man in half, unlimited access to former Escobar estate, and all the grass and crops that they can eat. The Colombian Environment Minister, Susana Mohamed, has announced plans to control the hippo population through measures including surgical sterilization, possible euthanasia, and just sending them to other countries. Can I suggest that you drop them in the swamps of Florida? 160 hippos would keep the governor too busy to worry about made-up problems like the culture war, and maybe things will improve in the state. Just a thought, just a suggestion. Well, guys, it's finally happening. The unnecessary Netflix sequel that we never knew that we wanted. Narcos Hippos. This is my long-term brainchild, and I am pumped to see where this goes so that I can pitch the first script. We can watch the ragtag bunch of underdog hippos become the Colombian marshland's most fierce and powerful gang, only to then get in a gangland-style turf war with the Colombian Parks and Rec team over a turf needed to control the manufacture and sale of cocaine plants. See, it's all coming together, guys. It'll be like a more interesting version of the Emu War. Sure, emus were stronger than those 1920s machine guns, but these are hippos. A lot of modern guns won't get the job done either. And you can't drone the shit out of the place. You need that land for growing crops. And that's the end of the episode, guys. Thanks so much for hanging around. I really do appreciate me making it all the way to the end. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do share it around. Do all the things. Like, subscribe, rate it, wherever it is that you're listening to. If it's a podcast or if it's in video form, just give it a go. 5 stars, 1 star. Otherwise, what's the point? Share it with a friend, someone you think would enjoy it. And be sure to come out to one of the live shows. Remember, I'm in Wynnum, I'm in Perth, I'm in Rockingham, I'm in Adelaide, I'll be doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival and more to come. Do sign up to the Patreon if you want to support the podcast but can't come out to one of the shows or just don't want to. That's it's also an easy way to do that. But until then, guys, thanks a lot for hanging around, and I'll see you next time. Bye. Thank you.